Outkick the coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
He is Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. You can listen to the show on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us on hundreds of Fox Sports Radio affiliates all across the country. And wherever you are making us a part of your Wednesday morning, we appreciate you doing so. We're going to take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific. And we do so with my man, the one and only Brady Quinn.
I can't wait for this segment because I'm really curious where you're going to go here. You've teased it. You've got me all excited about it. I have no idea what you're about to throw my way. So give it to me, man. Hit me with whatever it is you've got on your mind.
Okay, so before we get to the idea itself, let's just set this up. For anybody that did not see the game or did not see the conclusion of the game because they just assumed at halftime that it was a wrap in Brooklyn and the Milwaukee Bucks were going to roll because James Harden was banged up and Kevin Durant couldn't do it by himself, you missed out on one of the all-time classic performances by Kevin Durant. Unbelievable stuff. One of the performances when he goes into the Hall of Fame upon first year eligible after he retires, this is going to be one of the performances you look at when it comes to Kevin Durant's career and you go, that it was that game. And the comp to it, I guess, is LeBron James back when the Miami Heat were facing elimination at Boston, just put on this epic performance, completely took over the game. And that's going to be one of the go-tos when you talk about LeBron's career, one of his great performances. This was just a masterpiece, a masterclass by Kevin Durant with the 49 points, the triple-double, all of it in this spot. James Harden nowhere close to 100% on one leg with the hamstring injury, to see what Durant was able to do with some help from Jeff Green and the Milwaukee Bucks, who did not play well in the second half. Just an awesome performance by KD. Here was his head coach, Steve Nash, talking about the performance afterwards.
Historic performance. I mean, he played the entire game. He barely missed. Got to the line, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, 49 points. I mean, it's ridiculous what he's able to do. We know he's capable of nights like this, but to do it tonight, you know, we lose Kai. You know, James obviously is soldiering through his ailments. We're down bodies, we're wounded, and for him to have the toughness, the mentality, you know, that's what makes him one of the all-time greats. And so this is a performance that, you know, a signature performance, you know, for Kevin, and it was beautiful to watch.
Just awesome stuff. Absolutely awesome stuff. All right. So let me present to you this. He played every single minute in that game last night. James Harden, clearly not 100%, as we mentioned. And James Harden played all but 2 minutes in that game last night. You have a 3-2 series lead. Do you sit either Kevin Durant and or James Harden in game 6 and go for it all in game 7?
It's a valid question.
Okay. All right. We're off to a good start.
I'll be honest with you. We've worked together for, I think, over 5 years, maybe 6 years now, but who's counting?
Yep.
This is the best question you've ever asked on the
radio. Okay, very good. All right, very good.
Granted, see, we're on live radio. You've asked a lot of other questions off the air.
Hey, can we get a
this
round
is
of
the
applause?
Best question.
Give me a round of applause. There's a live studio audience here.
Golf claps.
Yeah, listen, golf claps, you name it. I mean, a new jumping jacks, whatever you want to do. This is just a momentous occasion here. I have finally gotten not a completely shot down reply from Brady Quinn with one of my ideas.
You know what I'll give you to, by the way? Great question.
Yes, very good.
So let me try my best to answer this. I don't know if you're Kevin Durant that you can afford sitting after that performance. I don't think you can. I don't think you can run the risk of, you know, not putting yourself out there in the event that, let's say, the Bucks have a terrible shooting night. And Jeff Green feels inspired. Blake Griffin, who stepped up too, some of the other pieces. you know, you find yourself in a much closer game throughout the course of it where you're not getting blown out by 16 and a half. So I don't know that you can have a performance like that, a historical performance, something we haven't seen in the playoffs in the NBA history ever, and then not followed up. You know, yeah. And it's not like James Harden had an impact anyway. When you look at, you know, even though he played a lot, it was kind of hit or miss. He wasn't able to shoot well. There was a times when he was, like early on, he had two turnovers, should have been three if the ball didn't hit off a Bucks defender. But the reality is, you know, outside of maybe being a decoy a little bit or them being somewhat curious early on in that game, if he was going to be able to have an impact, he didn't have much of one. So it would make more sense to sit Harden and then let Durant play now that you've clearly identified, you know, Blake Griffin and Jeff Green are the two other guys that have to step up in their roles. I would much rather see that than both sit and say, we're just going to go in all in on game seven. That would be, you know, you run the risk of not being able to win that game six just because they're playing at home in Milwaukee. That doesn't mean you're not going to be able to pull off the win. You've got the momentum right now. And obviously you're in the Bucks players' heads. So I would rather follow that up if I'm Durant and play, regardless of if I'm fatigued, tired, what have you. I'm just doing all I can to rest. Now, if that game goes sideways and we're down by 22 in the third quarter,
they're getting yanked.
He's not playing in the fourth quarter. And by the way, I don't think Harden should play. Harden shouldn't play until game seven. There's just, he didn't look even anywhere close enough to being ready. Like, he reminded me of James Harden in like 15 years when he wants to go play like a pickup basketball game.
Oh, come on.
That's I'm just saying, like, he was still James Harden as far as, you know, what he's capable of, but he was nowhere close to 100%. And the way he was moving reminded me of like an older man playing a pickup basketball game where he wasn't going to try to go for any loose balls. He wasn't going to be able to play great defense. He wasn't going to try to be able to get by you as far as like dribble penetration or try to take you to the hoop. He was just going to take an open outside shot if he got it. And that was it. So that was more of what he reminded me of. I don't think it's worth it trying to have him play game six. And then obviously you got to see where Kyrie's at. The ankle injury looked bad, but you know, who knows? Who knows if he could come back?
He ain't coming back this series. Listen, I don't need a medical degree to tell you when you sit all the way down on your ankle and it's underneath you and it folds like that. Come on, man, you've sprained your ankles enough times. Kyrie Irving's not coming back in this series. I agree.
Man, you don't have any ankles, so that's your issue. Okay, you're missing your calves somehow.
Well, I mean, what do you want?
God made you with legs that don't involve calves.
Yeah, so. What do you want from me? I'm a flamingo with bad tattoos. I told you that. I mean, it's nothing to, you know, I work my calves every day. I do whatever I can to try and make it work. And, you know, genetics. I mean, listen, some people are just, you know, they're shorted on certain things, right? I don't have calves.
amongst others.
Yeah.
You should have got calf implants. Like, that was the thing you were missing out on.
Thought about it. Listen, I thought about it. I did. And then I realized.
Knowing how vain you are, I could see that.
Yeah, but I didn't want one of those medical emergencies where all of a sudden, I'm going to, play Frisbee on the beach and my calf explodes. And next thing you know, hair gel starts falling out of my legs and out of my toenails. I didn't want to deal with that. So I just roll with what I roll. All right. I'm not the most attractive guy in the world in a pair of shorts. But you know what? That's why God made salmon pants. And that's why God made me wear salmon pants at your golf tournament. So what do you say about that?
Right. And you haven't been back since. So.
Yeah. Yep. You guys get a taste, all right? I'll decide when you'll get a volume two of that successful album of me playing at your golf tournament. I'll decide. Not you. I get to decide that. But here's the thing on the game six situation for the Brooklyn Nets. I would agree I would not play James Harden. I also, when I asked the question about Kevin Durant and do you sit him, there's zero chance that Kevin Durant would agree to sit. You could say whatever you want about Durant, but if you recall, in the NBA Finals, there was a feeling when he was dealing with that Achilles issue that it could go at any time. Yeah, that it could go at any time. And afterwards, when you had everybody trying to speak up for Kevin Durant, you had all these people on sports radio and television talking about how the Golden State Warriors wronged him. They used him and abused him, and they put him out there when he shouldn't have been playing. And Kevin Durant was the first guy afterwards to say, man, don't blame the medical staff. I'm a hooper. This is what I do. Like don't blame the medical staff. If he didn't want to play and he knew the risks of not playing, he wouldn't have played. So with all that being said, I don't see how there's any way he doesn't come out and try and play game six. Now, Giannis said afterwards that he would like the responsibility of guarding Kevin Durant, that he would like that responsibility in game six. And I would just say this, be careful what you wish for. All right. Just be careful, because, you know, that's a sniper.
Here's the thing that, like, and I get it, like, superstars want to step up. He wants to do all he can in that moment. He understands their season could be coming to a close. They're one game away. But what he doesn't understand is if he takes a step back offensively with his point production, because he's spending so much energy trying to stop Kevin Durant on the other end, they don't really have someone to fill that void. Like, Middleton's played a big role. He's done a good job scoring. But outside of if Giannis takes a step back and Middleton continues to do what he does, they're still not going to be able to replace that production.
Yeah.
And so that becomes the biggest concern, I think, even if he does want to try to match up with KD moving forward for obviously the next game, if not the next two. I don't know if that's the best way of going about doing it. Hell, I'd rather put his brother on KD. Like, the energy that his brother brings in when he comes in the game, put PJ Tucker and then put the other Antetokounmpo on him whenever he comes in the game. Just foul Durant the whole time and frustrate him. You know, try to rough him up a little bit physically like they do back in the old days. Old Detroit Pistons versus Chicago Bulls.
You damn right.
Back when Michael Jordan couldn't even get to the lane half the time.
Damn right. That's how it's done. By the bad boy Pistons back when it was cool to score a point, have games finish in the 80s. And 90s. So it was cool back then. Now it's not anymore. Everybody
wants a shootout.
Well, I don't want
that, but I'll tell you this much. You weren't going to the rim and getting just a free pass. It's nowhere close to what it is nowadays.
Not happening.
You were getting an elbow, a forearm, a punch to the face.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally had to cover the ball up like it was football with two hands.
Yeah, and here's the so Charles Barkley, we made the point earlier. We talked about how Barkley was just so upset at the Bucks' performance. The fact that you've got this team this wounded, And you couldn't figure that out. Like, with that lead, you couldn't figure that out. It was just yes, Kevin Durant was amazing. He was efficient. Jeff Green was awesome. They made the plays late when they needed to. But Milwaukee also played so poorly at times, especially in the second half. And one of the things Barkley said that we were laughing about earlier is he said, man, I wouldn't have fed those guys on the plane. Like, on the plane ride home, those guys aren't getting to eat, just based on. And he was saying that, and he was half joking. But the other point that he made that I do think is a valid one. So the final turnover, all right, so that in the end, what ended up being the crucial turnover, Middleton made a great move to get to the basket. And then as they tried to give it to Giannis, he fumbled it away. And Jeff Green came up with the steal, and that ended up pretty much icing the game from that point forward. And one of the things that Barkley said afterwards, and I was thinking the same thing. He said, well, the reason that he was fumbling the ball right there, Giannis, is because he knew he was going to get fouled. And he's got zero confidence when he goes to the foul line. Zero confidence. And so it's almost like, hot potato, get the ball away from me, or you try and rush a decision because he knows a foul is coming, because they would just rather put him at the foul line knowing all the issues he's had, because it's going to go one of three ways. Either he's going to make one, he's going to miss both, or he's going to get called for a 10-second violation. That's it. Like, that's the best-case scenario. So with all of that playing out the way that it is, I just wonder, if this goes south again in game six, what the hell's happening in Milwaukee moving forward? I mean, they're going to have to make some sort of a change. Giannis is there long term. Whether they decide to move on from Mike Budenholzer, the head coach, who knows? But this is a bad, bad spot to be in if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and their fan base.
What makes you think Giannis is there long term?
Oh, well, he signed the contract, and you know how this works. In sports, when guys sign a contract, it means they're there for life, Brady Quinn. You didn't know that in sports?
it's why I asked this question, because there's plenty of NBA players, plenty of players in general who are under contract that end up looking for greener pastures. And I don't say greener as far as money. I'm saying greener as far as if I'm Giannis and I want to win a championship. And that's what everyone's doing right now. Like, as a society, as people, we tend to look at trends and we tend to say, well, what's everyone else who's one of the best players in the NBA doing? I should follow their lead, go find one or two of their stars to team up with to go win a championship, because it doesn't feel like it's happening there. Now, they could make a lot of moves in the offseason and maybe that's going to work for them. But you'd have to admit this. If he goes to the West, it only makes things more cloudy over there and an easier path for the Nets. Whereas right now, these are the top two teams in the East. I know we're not there yet for the Eastern Conference Finals, but the winner of this will go on to represent the East. I'd be surprised if that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But they have a much easier path, at least, to get to an NBA Finals. So, you know, maybe it makes more sense to stay in Milwaukee, but this team still needs help. You know, they still need to bring in another superstar, someone else to kind of be the Robin to him being Batman.
Yeah, he's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. This is Fox Sports Radio. It's Outkick the Coverage here on FSR. You can listen to the show on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, a multiple-time Pro Bowler could be calling it a career. A very, very surprising comment. We will get into all of that for you next here. Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Did we have a statement made in the NFL? An interesting conversation involving a superstar in the NFL. And we'll have the very latest on that coming up a little over 10 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio. But right now, she is always kind enough to join us, and she is a damn TV star. A damn TV star. You know, I'm doing stuff around the house, and I look up, and there's Shannon Spake on television, looking dapper as usual.
Looking good. That's right.
I mean, it's what she does when she's not, you know, with her husband, and they're pulling snakes out of the water that are like 90 feet long. It's like she's basically on the set of Anaconda, and she's like pulling snakes out of a body of water. She is doing great television for Fox Sports One, and she joins us now here on Outkick the Coverage. Shannon, what's happening?
I see what you're doing there. You're trying to compliment me, but you're also letting the bosses know that you always have FS1 on at home. So much so that you're like just randomly doing like work around the house and watching Race Hub on a, I guess it was a Thursday night.
Damn right.
Shannon, Jonas brought up a great point. I feel like you could have easily played the role of Jennifer Lopez in Anaconda. I mean, have you acted before? Like, could you have jumped into that role, you think?
So working at FS1 and Fox Sports, we do a lot of like spoofs, right? Like we do a lot of like music videos, or we just have a lot of fun on set, like leading up to some of our racing shows. And I've learned over the years that I'm not an actress at all. I can't keep a straight face. Some people are just like so good at it. And I like to think that I am. And you always think like, oh, I could do that. But no, not an actress. And I couldn't. And first of all, Jennifer Lopez, like, she's reverse aging, so that's quite the compliment. And if it's the snakes that are doing it, I'm all in.
Okay, very good. Now,
well, it's not a problem for you, then. You got plenty of snakes.
Well, listen, yeah. I've got to ask you the question, because I was thinking about this. Like, how is this going to go? Like, where the hell are you going to go with this answer? Because you cover so many different sports, not just NASCAR, but obviously, you know, football and work on the sidelines, and been doing this for as long as you have. We were talking about the great performance of Kevin Durant last night, and just, you know, one of the great individual performances we've seen. But for you up close and personal, like, what are some of the individual performances that you have seen that you will take with you later on, and you can tell people about, you know, for the longest time about, I was there when this happened from so-and-so at this sporting event?
Yeah, so I did write some stuff down. I actually, just so the bosses know, I wake up early to listen to the start of your show so that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Awesome.
There you go. So I did quickly. It's hard to kind of like jog my brain when there's been so much. And I think of a lot of like performances, our individual performances in the moment. Like a guy like Saquon, right? I know that he's battled injuries as of late, but when that dude breaks loose and gets through that line and he can do some of the stuff that he does, you just go, wow, right? In that moment, you go, wow. But some of the larger stage performances, So the 2015 national championship, Duke versus Wisconsin, Grayson Allen came to play. And I remember after that game, Coach K saying something like, well, now everyone is going to know who Grayson Allen is, because I just remember him sort of taking over that game as I think he was a freshman too in that game. And Anthony Davis, I covered the national championship, Kentucky, Kansas. And yeah. I remember he literally would like defend on one end, and then like he would be down at the other end shooting a three or shooting a two. And nobody knew at that time that he could really, he had the range to shoot all those threes. And Coach Calipari just let him go in that game. And I remember just being like, whoa, we were just like back and forth and back and forth with AD. Amir Abdullah in a Nebraska-Miami game, dude ran for 229 yards. And I just remember it was such a cool environment, first of all, because it was at Nebraska. And Brady, I know you've probably played there before, but that environment at night, and it's a Miami game, and it was Bo Pelini who would just lose his mind on the sideline if you ever watched him. And that performance by Amir was really good. And then I think just long-term, I covered the 2015 Kentucky Wildcats from start to finish, and watching Karl Anthony Towns over that season become the player that he would eventually become, because he wasn't, if you know, at first. And Calipari was so hard on him, and I was able to watch a lot of those practices one-on-one in preparation for their run in the tournament. I was embedded with them that year because they were undefeated, and so watching Karl Anthony Towns sort of come into his own was a pretty cool thing as well. So there you go.
I'm gonna ask you, just because you brought up Kentucky, it's a complete tangent, but I also have a lot of buddies who went to Kentucky, and they're always clamoring about the basketball program, yada, 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 everything else that comes along with it. Why haven't they had sustained success? Because if I'm not mistaken, that year they had a great regular season, maybe even SEC tournament, but I don't think they ended up winning it, did they?
No, they didn't. They lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four.
That's right.
And then Wisconsin went on to play Duke in the Final Four. They almost lost to Notre Dame in the Elite Eight. I remember that game. And I just remember sitting there. I was literally embedded with this team. I hadn't seen my family in like 6 weeks, right? Because I would go from the tournament location to Lexington to watch them practice, to be with that team, to walk to class with those guys. Devin Booker was on that team, by the way. It was so much fun to watch those guys. They did not win. I remember it just being like the behind the scenes after that game, just watching those kids, the look of shock, even with John Calipari, just a look of shock.
Yeah, Shannon, let me tell you a little behind the curtain here. The only reason Brady brought that up to ultimately end the Kentucky story in heartbreak because they lost is because he likes to ride his friends when it comes to the Kentucky Wildcats and likes to get under their skin. So if they are listening to this, he wanted them to be reminded that they came up
short
that
year. That they didn't win.
Yeah, it was all an elaborate ruse by Brady Quinn to bust chops here.
Shannon, I'm just saying, you followed the team. You had intimate knowledge.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure that you were able to review that year that they were so great but not able to win a national championship. I do remember exactly where I was, though, for that Notre Dame-Kentucky game. And I'm not scared to admit it. All right? I was at my buddy's wedding in Napa. I left the reception. I found an Irish bar. I was there with like 60 other people. And we were beside ourselves because, look,
they should have won.
Well, I don't know if they should have or shouldn't, but they are close. And I'm like, there's no way they should be close with the Kentucky Wildcats, given how talented that team was. So just the fact that it was close, I think, was it Jerian Grant who had that last second shot that I think Karl Anthony Towns like ran down the entire court with him the whole length, ended up missing. But I remember that moment just thinking, like, there's no way those guys should have even been close to Kentucky. And yet they still were able to at least have a shot to win it, I think, in the end.
Do you remember when that team, the platoons, like the very first game, and I want to say maybe it was against Kansas, like in a tournament early in like November, where they came out and they were like the Monstars, right? Where they had their pictures, because that's what they looked like from Space Jam. Like they were so big, and then all of a sudden, here came five more. And then when those five got tired, here came five more. And what John Calipari did that year was so unique. Personally, like watching that team, I just think that it got to them every single weekend. It was, I mean, and I watched them get close in games where it would be like 6 or 7 minutes and Georgia would be up, or 6 or 7 minutes and Texas A&M would be up on them. And then they would just turn it on, right? They would just turn it on. All of a sudden, they've got a 15-point lead in the last 5 minutes. I just think that they just ran out. They ran out of whatever it was, because that was a really long season for those kids. They were under a ton of pressure every single weekend. What's it like to be undefeated? It's undefeated. It's undefeated. They had camera crews following them. It was because they wanted to do a documentary when they did go undefeated. I just think it got to them. They're 18. Those are all freshmen. They were 18 years old coming in and playing in one of the biggest organizations and one of the biggest fan bases out there.
See, I've wondered that as well, too. And you talk to these coaches. Shannon Spake joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, Outkick the Coverage. Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here on FSR. I wonder how many of these coaches, like, I'll bet if you ask Belichick, he would have rather the Patriots, that team that lost, that was trying to go undefeated and lost to the Giants in the
right?
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I'll bet if you ask some of these coaches, they would rather have lost a game in the regular season just to get it out of the way. Because I think that was the quote when Calipari said there was a tight game early in the tournament, and I think it was one of my favorite quotes because he told him, he's like, yeah, I just told my guys, just land the plane. He goes, it's going to be bumpy, but just land the plane. Don't crash it, okay? I'm okay with it, especially early on, but just land the plane. And I wonder how many of those coaches, although they'll be upset with a regular season loss, look at it and go, ultimately, that's the best thing moving forward because at least we got it out of the way.
Yeah, no, there's zero question. I heard a story one time about a team that was playing overseas, and they, you know, an NFL team, and they really wanted to win the game overseas, and they didn't win it, and they wanted to win it because there was this really cool trophy. They ended up winning the Super Bowl at the end of the year, and I think it was the head coach that looked at someone, was like, do you still want that trophy from beginning and, you know, the beginning of the season? And it's like, no, this is the trophy that we wanted. We wanted, you know, the Lombardi Trophy, wanted the Super Bowl trophy. There's absolutely zero question. And I've heard many coaches say that, right? We needed that loss. We needed that close win. We needed to be kind of punched in the face and shown that we have vulnerabilities and places that we can improve. You hear Nick Saban say it all the time. It's one of the things that I carry with me when I train for my triathlons, is that you learn more about yourself when you're under stress, or if you're under duress, or you know, or adversity, or any of that stuff. That's when you learn the most about yourself. I think about that all the time in my daily life because it's so true.
Shannon, last one for me before we let you go. So, spider tack in baseball has been this big thing of late in regards to pitchers trying to get an advantage, you know, right, on grip and spin and all that stuff, and whether or not that's the case, and if it should be debated. That's not my question for you. It's more in regards to NASCAR. And I'm just kind of curious, too, talking about some of the advantages that maybe some of these, whether it's a pit crew, whether it's the driver themselves, constructing the car, like, what are some of the things that are most controversial, you know, good or bad, you know, with NASCAR right now, what they have going on?
Yeah, so we talked about this last week, Brady. With NASCAR, it's inches. It's quarter 100,000th of an inch, right? The size of like a dollar bill can make like a huge difference. And so some of those things you don't see when they go through pre-race inspection, and maybe like their tolerance is off just a little bit because the crew chief and the engineer and the car chief realize that if you put this out of tolerance just a little bit, then that can create a little bit more drag or a little bit more downforce or a little bit more side draft or whatever it may be. So a lot of those things are the tolerances. As far as like pit crews, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You go out and do a faster pit stop than the rest of the guys. I mean, you can't have uncontrolled tires. You can't do this. So it's pretty cut and dry. They over the years have really cut down on a lot of the stuff that you can do inside of the race car. I was just told a story the other day that it was like back in the, I think it's got to be the 80s. I think it was DW, Darrell Waltrip, and like his teammate was found to have something in the gasoline. There was some kind of additive inside the gasoline that would like help the car go faster. And so NASCAR came to DW and was like, hey, we found this. What do you think we should do? And DW was like, I think that you should, you know, we should throw the book at him. You should throw him out. And he's like, all right, well, then don't bring your car back next week either, because it was in your car, too. It was some kind of story like that. Now, all of that stuff can't, I mean, it doesn't happen as much anymore. And if it does, no, I should say we don't hear about that stuff happening because it is so cut and dry and there is so much on the line and you're not going to do blatant examples of that. It is that 100,000th of an inch, right? The size of a dollar bill that can make the biggest difference in some of these cars.
She's one of our favorites. Get her on Twitter at Shannon Spake. She covers that NASCAR for Fox, Fox Sports One. Also, listen, as college football season approaches and the NFL season, we are going to get more into that as well, too. But Shannon, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for popping on. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Shannon.
You guys have a great day.
It is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so I do want to make sure we have full time for this, Brady Quinn, because there was some curious comments from an NFL quarterback coming up. So I want to make sure we'll get to that here. So that'll be happening in 10 minutes from now, and you will hear from that NFL quarterback. So 10 minutes from now, we will have that discussion. Here's what I want to know. All right, say you were in NASCAR or, you know, pick a sport, like pick any sport. What would be the go-to way to cheat? Like, would you doctor something that was used in the field of play? Would you go PEDs? Like, what are we talking about here? Like how? Because Shannon was mentioning, you know, back in the 80s, they put something in the gas. Now, I don't know a damn thing about cars. I'd love to know what you put in gas to give you an advantage on a racetrack.
I think cocaine. Some sort of drug.
That's,
you know,
good.
An upper of some sort.
Yeah, no, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
That's what they use in those little greyhounds. Like I told you, I sent you an article the other week when we were doing our famous show Headline
Live.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
There was a bunch of greyhounds all hopped up on narcotics. I mean, that's clearly what they try to do to get those things to run faster. But
let me ask you this.
Okay, is it as simple as saying to you, cutting weight? Like I would go through, I'd basically cut 8 pounds, 10 pounds. I mean, if everything's about these milliseconds, you know, of a difference between cars and, you know, everything else, like, wouldn't it help to be 8 pounds less,
I mean,
you know, heavy?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard this story. Speaking of cutting weight, this is a good one. There was back when Mayweather and Pacquiao fought, one of the stories that didn't get enough publicity was that Floyd Mayweather was allowed to rehydrate using an IV. So he cut weight and then was allowed to rehydrate using this IV, which is illegal according to the Nevada State Athletic Commission, but they let Floyd do it. And if that were anybody else, it probably wouldn't have happened. But because Floyd brings in so much revenue to the state and it's such big business anytime he fights, they kind of let him cut corners a little bit and let him get away with it. Now, personally, I don't see the issue with using an IV to try and hydrate afterwards. I don't know why that's a rule, but it is a rule. And you could look at that as being a little bit of a competitive advantage for Floyd Mayweather, who ended up winning that fight. You know, just saying.
What was if he went across state lines before the fight? Like, let's say he goes to Cali, goes to Arizona, goes somewhere.
Like Barrett Robbins, like a Barrett Robbins move before the Super Bowl?
I have no idea who that is.
Okay, remember Barrett Robbins of the Raiders went to Tijuana before the Super Bowl and lost his mind? Remember that? Robbins at the Super Bowl?
I'm not sure
Raiders.
That necessarily applies here. I'm not really pointing out the fact that the guy lost his mind. I'm just saying if he went across a state border, got the IV performed, then came back. Is that deemed permissible?
I don't believe so, but I don't even know how you would monitor that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you could easily get away with it.
That's a good point. And so I feel like we're giving out great advice to fighters out there. Yeah, like, listen, like, if you did want to cut corners, this is the move.
This is the show to listen to.
Yes, all right? Absolutely.
We will find a way, all right? We'll help you cheat. Even though we have never done anything wrong.
No.
We will help you cut corners, all right?
By the way, I like how you and I are sitting here talking about all the ways that you can, you know, bend the rules. And I think we're the last two human beings alive on planet Earth who have never smoked a cigarette or weed. But I like how we're the authority on how to cut corners and break the rules here. Like, how about you and I, huh? Just a couple of Mormons,
guys,
yeah.
You know?
A couple of Mormons and Amish people doing sports talk radio. Yeah, we're the ones telling people how to cut corners and cheat here. That's what we do. All right, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox. This is Outkick the Coverage here, Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, you will hear from the story in the NFL. It is the number one story, and you will hear from the man himself who is the center of this story, and it's yours next here on FSR.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Aaron Rodgers, who I don't know if you know this or not, Brady Quinn, he's been in the news this offseason, kind of an interesting offseason for him. He was promoting the match, this big ordeal they're going to do that we're all going to get sick of at some point, because it was cool the first couple of times around, and now we're just going to keep trotting out the same foursome or the same two or three guys every single tournament. But it's the Bryson DeChambeau, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson matchup that they're going to be doing. And so Aaron Rodgers was talking on Bleacher Report. This is via Bleacher Report about his off season. And this were the comments from Aaron.
It's been one of those quiet off seasons you just dream about, where you can just kind of go through your process on your own quietly. And, that's all you can ask for as an older player in the league and someone who's been around for a long time and just enjoys that time to yourself, to just relax, to not be bothered, to not have any obligations or anything going on. And, I think that's what this off season has been about. It's been about really enjoying my time and spending it where I want to spend it and not feeling like I have to go anywhere, not having any responsibilities, but still being an NFL player at the same time. It's been great.
How about that? Mr. Freedom, Aaron Rodgers, just enjoying that freedom, Brady Quinn, as he goes to Hawaii to turn into a hippie in front of our very eyes. Just amazing stuff from Aaron Rodgers there. How about that?
Well, you're also not selling everyone the T-shirt he was wearing. What did that T-shirt say?
Yeah, I'm offended. That was the T-shirt from Aaron Rodgers. I'm offended. Never passive aggressive. He's a straight shooter, that Aaron Rodgers.
I love it, though. It provides this material. It's like a subtle jab at Mark Murphy for Weekends at Murphy, which is coming up.
Yeah.
That tends to be when he does some of his best work, old Weekends at Murphy's.
Yes.
So, look. Here's the interesting thing about that comment is, if he didn't want to have or feel like there's any obligation to the offseason, he shouldn't put $500,000 workout bonus in his contract. Okay. I don't know that you really need to for quarterbacks too, by the way. Like, we've talked about this subject before. It's kind of standard procedure in a place like Green Bay, because it's hard to keep guys up there in the offseason. They'd rather be somewhere else, sunny and warm training, and preparing for the, mini camp and OTAs like we have going on right now. So that is something that kind of comes almost standard sometimes with their contracts, just to incentivize guys to be up in Green Bay participating in the offseason program. And that's something that, he signed up for. He's to the point in his career where he doesn't need to. I mean, he really doesn't need to if he didn't want to, but he's still got it in there. So He's kind of only got himself to blame in regards to at least those monies. And as far as the rest of what he's saying, I think there is a fair amount of, I've gotten to this point in time in my career at, 36 years old. I proved to you that I can still be the best player in the league. I don't really need this at this point in time right now. This is what I need in my life at this point in time right now. And I do think there's a fair amount of, like, him probably saying, I've given so much of my life to the sport, I would like to start to have some time off. If you recall, Tom Brady started doing this around this age. He started taking off some time to be away during those voluntary portions of the off season to be with his family. And then he would come up for the mandatory portion of things. And we all looked at it and said, well, look how many Super Bowls the guys won. You know, look how he's still playing at this age. Clearly, he doesn't need to be there. I think Aaron, even though he doesn't have the Super Bowls, he has one. But I think he feels similar in regards to, like, I don't need to be there right now. I'll come in there when I need to. And the last thing I'll just say is he's one of those guys that I think is also carrying the torch for the NFLPA and the offseason. In basically saying, we saw what happened last year without an offseason, how things operated. Now we're going into an offseason where I really don't feel like this stuff's for me. Like, I'll be good when training camp comes around. I'll be good when the season comes around. Even though, you know, there's still so many other things they've got to sort out, I do think that's more of his mental mindset as far as how he needs to handle himself as he prepares for the season, if and when he does decide to come back.
You don't think there's some players in that Packers locker room who are getting a little bit fed up with the idea of, well, it's me, I need this time, I'm Aaron Rodgers? It's like, dude, we've been off 5 months. How much more time do you need off to yourself? I just wonder, and I get it. And he was one of the guys that was vocal about the CBA that got agreed to. He was one of the main voices who came out and said, you know, along the lines, I don't know what we're doing. You know, maybe people just aren't reading into this before they agree to it and just sign off on this. So he's one of the. So I do think that there is an element of that when it comes to, you know, it's kind of sticking up for the NFLPA and kind of, you know, drawing a line in the sand. But man, not everybody has what he has. So there are some guys that have to show up. And I just wonder if there are players in that Packers locker room who are getting a little bit fed up of the Aaron Rodgers, you know, passive aggressive tour and just want some sort of resolution. Like, you're either going to be here or not. And I wonder if that's rubbing people the wrong way.
So this is probably something that bothers you. And it doesn't bother a lot of other guys for this reason. Once he comes back, and Davante Adams or everyone else starts catching passes from him as opposed to Jordan Love, they go, oh, thank God he's back. thank God he came back. You know, right. Thank God he's our quarterback again. That's the unfortunate reality, is he's just that much more talented. And so all those players around, they see what life is like without him, without his experience, without his talent. And they're getting a dose of what the future looks like with Jordan Love right now. And I'm not saying Jordan Love won't be a good player. But I can tell you right now, he is nowhere close to the player Aaron Rodgers is. So even as much as the other players may be watching this and upset about it, the reality is they will be welcoming him back, okay, as their savior, if and when he does decide to come back, because the contrast between him and Jordan Love.
Well, so it's kind of like, you know, the following year when I didn't go to your golf tournament, like, you guys felt the same thing. Like, you felt like, man, you know, there's
we actually had
here.
The biggest year we'd ever had.
Thank
raised
you.
More money than we ever good had. Guy. And actually, we had great reviews.
Yeah,
when
good
you
person. Screw you, Brady Quinn. Two more hours of these shenanigans next.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
We will be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Eastern time, 3 o'clock Pacific, right here on FSR. And Brady Quinn, we are going to have a headline or lie coming up tomorrow. We don't want to log jam Friday up with all the fun stuff and shenanigans. We figure we spread it out a little bit. You know, fallout from the Game 5s later on tonight in the NBA playoffs, some headline or lie, NFL talk. How about that on a Thursday?
I'm excited for it, man. We'll see how round 2 goes. Round 1 was kind of close, I guess, but it's a different crowd. It's definitely a different feel than what we're accustomed to on Sunday nights.
Yeah, but we will be live here for the part 2 or second edition of Headliner Live, which should be a lot of fun here on FSR. Now, one of the conversations outside of just the epic performance by Kevin Durant in Game 5 last night for the Brooklyn Nets, one of the other discussions that we had was Matt Nagy, the head coach of the Chicago Bears, who has basically said, we're sticking with the plan no matter what. You know, Andy Dalton is our quarterback week one of the NFL season, and Justin Fields is our number 2 quarterback. Now, what's also interesting about that is that, from my understanding, Nick Foles is still on the roster, right? So I believe Nick Foles is still on the roster. So
yes.
So what is he, like the backup punter? Like, what are we doing? Like, is he?
I think if everyone gets hurt, he comes in and leads them to a Super Bowl. I think that's how that scenario works out.
Listen, one of those quarterbacks has a statue up somewhere in an NFL stadium, and that is neither Justin Fields nor Andy Dalton. So Nick Foles is still on the roster, but you've got Matt Nagy saying, "All right, look, this is how the plan is going to go. We want this to mirror what happened in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith, even though a lot of different." Between the two scenarios, and you thought maybe it was a good idea to throw out some options, right? Some to present some different ways in which the Chicago Bears and Matt Nagy could turn to Justin Fields for week one game that'll be at SoFi against the Rams on Sunday night.
All right, Jonas, I've got four options for you, all very possible and all have happened actually in recent history. Let's start off with number one. Andy Dalton gets his lung punctured by a doctor in pregame before week one, a la what happened to Tyrod Taylor that actually allowed Justin Herbert to start week two and then moving forward for the rest of the season. So that's option one for you.
Okay
option two,
yeah.
Andy Dalton gets mono. Yeah, if you'll recall, this happened to Sam Darnold. It forced him to miss a number of games before he could come back. When he did come back, it was almost like a remake of The Sixth Sense where he was seeing dead people on the field,
yes,
as he admitted on national television. So
All right. That's
option number two.
Okay.
All right, option number three, and this is a little more of a serious one, but what happens if it becomes so apparent to Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, everyone within the Chicago Bears organization that Justin Fields is just better. He's just better. Bottom line is he's just better. A la what happened with Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn back in Seattle in 2012. Maybe it forces the Bears' hand with three preseason games, and there's just no other choice than Justin Fields. That's option number three. And then finally, option number four, Andy Dalton, between now and the beginning of the season, gains 50 pounds because of all the good food there in Chicago, the deep dish pizza. He ends up putting on a few extra LBs, and Matt Nagy, well, he can't just roll out Andy Dalton as the starting quarterback. He's going to have to go with Justin Fields in that case.
Okay, now, let me go ahead and just break all of these down here on Fox Sports Radio. So the punctured lung, I'm going to go out and say that that's probably not going to happen, because I do think that mistake that happened last year is probably the worst case scenario for any training staff in the NFL. And I think everybody's on high alert. Like, let's go ahead and make sure we don't all make that same mistake. So I don't think that is a likely candidate for Justin Fields to take the field. No pun intended. Mono. I mean, listen, I don't know exactly about Andy Dalton's social life, but mono seems something that Sam Darnold's the only person who's had it in like the last 40 years. It feels like tuberculosis. Like back in the day, Doc Holliday is like what do they call him, a lunger?
Yeah,
I'm just saying, like, it just feels like one of those old time diseases that you never hear about anymore. Like mono,
well, at least
like,
not after college. Basically, it ends in college for most people.
I mean, it's like and by the way, I mean But again, by the way, could you imagine if Baker Mayfield got mono? If Baker Mayfield got mono, that'd be the lead story on every single show, and they'd be told to cut him. Sam Darnold gets it, and the Sam Darnold Defense League sticks up for him in sports media, and everything is okay. So I don't believe that mono is an option. Andy Dalton gaining weight, that is a possibility. The food is fantastic in Chicago. But I'm going to go with option three, Brady Quinn. Of the two quarterbacks, who's got the better arm, Justin Fields or Andy Dalton?
I'd say it's Justin Fields.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's more athletic, Justin Fields or Andy Dalton?
Justin Fields, but Andy Dalton's not a bad athlete by any means. He is up there in age, but probably Fields at this point, yeah.
Okay. So there has to be some sort of a wow factor. And when those guys are at camp and you see them together, and if he's just outperforming him, is Matt Nagy still going to roll out Andy Dalton week one against the Rams? Like, what are you waiting for, dude? Like if he's just the better quarterback, what's the wait?
I think the other risk that you run is let's just say they don't start him and he comes in at some point, though, earlier in the middle of the season, and they start playing that much better. As much as that may lead to the thought of, oh, okay, Matt Nagy's got them in a better direction, now the field is starting, it also makes you question him going, well, why wasn't he starting him in the first place? Like, didn't we see this in training camp and preseason? You know, what's changed over the past 8 weeks? So I also think you got to call that into question, too, with how he goes about handling who should start and then who's going to be their starter week one.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.